joining the crew at the Geek Tank. At the Geek Tank, the Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Hi, I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
And I'm Senda.
And this is Geek Tank on the Go.
We're coming to you live as we get in this type of thing. But we're live right now.
Too live-ish.
From our perspective, it is live.
We are all sitting here in person.
Totally. At Enchanted Grounds Coffee House, the new location in Littleton, at the corner of Bowles and Middlefield. Go look it up.
This is the first time I've ever been to an Enchanted Grounds, and it is awesome.
It's home.
Gaming and coffee drinks, and non-coffee drinks like what Cinda had, the chai frappuccino.
Most delicious thing ever.
Yay. We're talking about starting as a role-playing aspect, starting a role-playing group, starting a role-playing character, starting a role-playing game as a GM.
Yeah.
Our three topics today.
So we'll start with starting a role-playing group. How do you get into role-playing? I want to be a role-player. I don't know anybody. How do I get into this? Because we all have different stories.
Might have just moved to town.
Yeah.
Now, my knowledge is a little outdated. I moved to Denver, Colorado from Louisville, Kentucky, back in 1996. And so the internet wasn't quite as
prolific.
The beast that it is. Yes. I remember being on BBSs, which is Bulletin Board Systems, and which was all text all the time. And, my handle was Low, L-O-W. Key, K-E-Y. So I was low key.
I see.
And the idea was, what if the trickster god was very laid back and procrastinated a lot?
Yeah, there you go. That works.
So I actually went to a game shop, and they had one of those old pinup boards, and someone had put an index card up there looking for role players. And so I gave the phone call. I gave them a phone call, and they were playing a Rifts system, I believe it was.
Good old Palladium.
Good old Rifts. I forget which one it was. It had like demons in it, and it was modern day. But they also played Magic the Gathering. So I was in. I found my group. And not long after that, I found the guy and your group through
our
Nexus of Denver called Alex.
Yes. And the Nexus of Denver called Alex. Alex.
There's always one of those people.
Yeah. There is. The 7 degrees of Alex.
Yep.
And so that's how
most of you probably know Alex.
Now, you had a different experience when you moved to Texas from Japan.
Right. Because when we came back from Japan, we were in Houston. We weren't here. And so all of our normal group, we thought about doing the online thing, but that wasn't working at the time. So what we did
By that you mean trying to game through Google
Skype
Hangout
or whatever. Okay. Well, Google Hangout was really young at that point in time, so it wasn't very mature. So yeah, but we went to Meetup. We found meetups that were in there because there's Meetup.com, and it's a bulletin board system effectively. It's just like the modern version of the BBS. But it's the same thing. There was a Pathfinder group in Houston, and every second Saturday we would drive into Houston because we were about 40 miles north, and we'd go in there and play with this Pathfinder group. And it was in a place similar to this. It was a game shop-ish place. But that's interesting because it's the same thing, just modernized. It's exactly what your story was, just modernized.
Right.
Now, of course, when we came back to Denver, we were back with you guys.
Of course. You can't get away from us.
Can't escape you guys.
So what kind of new gaming group experience have you had, Cinda?
Right. So mine are a little bit more recent because I had a very long dry spell, children and stuff. And so my recent experiences have actually been finding gaming groups on Twitter. That's how I met my co-host, Emily, for She's a Super Geek. And she is definitely my best friend, and I love her dearly, but she lives nowhere near me at all.
I did totally forget to introduce you.
Oh, that's okay.
I have not had enough caffeine yet. By the way, Cinda, our special guest tonight, is from the podcast She's a Super Geek, which is all about gaming with female GMs, and every episode's a new system, I think?
Not every episode, but darn near it. We kind of play one-shots, and however many one-hour episodes it takes us to complete that system
is how many
it goes. Usually two or three episodes per system, and we release those episodes every other Tuesday.
Sweet. And that is She's a Super Geek, and you can find the podcasts.
You can find them on iTunes, on Stitcher, and all over the place, or you can get them on our website, sasgeek.com.
So there you go. Cinda knows what she's talking about when it comes to role-playing games. So back to finding...
Now I have authority, right?
Yes.
Good.
We don't grant anybody authority.
No. So I've actually personally had really good luck finding groups on Twitter because I do actually play online a lot. I have a lot of restrictions on my time and when I can be out of the house. A lot of my gaming has been restricted very much to Google Hangouts. But there are also really amazing communities right now on actually Google Plus, which I know is really strange because no one uses it, but there are some really amazing RPG communities on Google Plus. Great places to find people who are looking for specific games or to post that you are looking for one. So for example, like the Fate community, if you're looking for a Fate game, there's people there all the time posting that they're running a game and looking for one more person, or that they are a person in X town looking for a game to join. It happens both ways. I see it all the time, and for other games too. And then also, there was one other thing that I was going to say, and I lost it. Oh, right. So the other thing is, a lot of people know about Roll20. If you're playing online, Roll20 is a really good tool. If you are into mapping and miniatures for playing online, they also have a forum system, which is very much that old BBS system. But since it is very specifically for role-playing, and it's a system that is associated with an online role-playing, web software, it's a really good place to find people, and I know that there's a lot of back and forth and finding people there as well. It's basically the online equivalent of that bulletin board in your local game shop.
Yeah, and what's interesting with Google Hangout too is you can have Google Documents shared and have a map, and you can have each of the individual figures as their own JPEG and share movement with them, so it's darn near the next best thing to be in real life.
I can one-up you on that.
Yes.
There is a Roll20 plugin for Google Hangouts that gives you access to most of the Roll20 stuff, including all of the maps and the dice rollers and all of the miniatures and all of that stuff. But in your Google Hangouts window, it's very cool. Roll20 themselves has been working on video and audio happening directly in their interface. My games, we've always played with Google Hangout, and now we don't even play with Roll20 because maps, psh, whatever.
Who needs maps? Where we're going, we don't need maps.
Google Documents, it's amazing what they're doing, because I've played now more games of HeroScape than I have in real life because they've mapped it, they've created a dice system for it. It's going the next direction.
Yeah, we use Google Hangouts a lot, and there's a couple of, I can't even remember them, and I wish that I could because I would love to plug them, but there's a couple of like really great dice rollers for specific games. There's a fudge dice roller for Fate, and they include things like lower thirds where you can put the name of your character in your name, so if you're playing with different people, when your face pops up, it has your character's name on it and maybe some other information that's pertinent.
It almost sounds like it's worth having this in a real life game with other people just to have that information.
It's very cool. It's very cool.
We'll edit in these plugs when we look them up later.
Right, when I go find them. To ask Emily what they are. I have one other thing, which has been an interesting way for me to meet a lot of gamers, especially in my area, which is that the convention circuit is just a great way to meet people who are into the same stuff and who are probably from the same vicinity, because if you go to a local convention, especially if you find a smaller one, because that's more likely to be just locals, you're going to find people who live in the same area who are probably into the same kinds of games that you are. And yeah. I've found a lot of people that way too.
We find a lot of them at Mile High Con.
Back in the old days before the internet, that was a big way too, as you go to a convention and find that. You know, I found that standing on a street corner with a sign that says, "We'll game for food," doesn't work very well.
No, it doesn't.
So,
it would help if you had worn pants.
I know. And never put THACO on the board because that just nobody will talk to you.
Nobody will talk to you if you put THACO on there.
I won't talk to you.
But that's a given no matter what. All right, so we're coming up to our first station break and we'll be back after this.
Okay, so we were talking about starting in RPGs, role-playing games. And the next segment we're going to talk about is players.
So you find a group that you want to play with, and then the next step is making your character.
I'm just going to call him Guy and well, be me.
Your method is to take a, like 1,000 characters, stick them in a hat, and pull one out randomly.
I love that.
You
That's
love
one of my favorite things.
If it involves random, you need to make a spinny board with every possible character and just spin it every time you play a game.
That's like genius, but I'm going to back you guys up one more step.
Yes, please.
No, I'm going to back you guys up one more step because I think the first thing you have to do to do is decide what game you're going to play.
That's true. You need to know what system you're in.
Yeah, I think that we should have a spinny board for what system we're going to play because that's how I roll.
I think you should
have the same, the way you roll.
I think you should have the same character and the same scenario, and the system changes every time.
Right. That actually could be a
lot of
fun.
We're
going to
play fanfic AUs of the same. I want to do that with my magical girls now.
Now you're like, I'm in.
It's the coffee shop AU. We play at Enchanted Grounds, and we're at Enchanted Grounds. But we're all magical girls.
And now it's GURPS, and you have to come up with 50 disads to justify your character.
I don't play rules-heavy games anymore.
Well, good news, everybody.
Good news, everybody.
You can play the watered-down version of GURPS.
But one of the things that's interesting is I'm listening to Senda say the same thing that I talk about a lot, which is the reason I do random character generation now is because I've played so many characters, and they ended up being the same archetype over and over and over and over and over. And so I'm getting kind of tired of my own characters, so now I challenge myself by saying I'm going to randomly generate a personality. And so that's what I do with them. And I hear you saying this, I don't do rules heavy anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's so many games. There's just so... And of course, we've been playing for years, so
we discovered this because we were trying to do the... I forgot what we were calling it, but we were trying a different system each time, and it was the... Do you remember when this system was good? Let's try it again. And we quickly found out that Star Frontiers. They don't age very well. We did D&D First Edition.
Oh,
So do you guys listen to System Mastery ever? That's a good podcast.
I should totally listen to stuff.
The reason that I mention it is because what they do is they find ancient systems and they slog through them and they read them all and then they review them. And it's amazing.
I remember we called it nostalgia gaming because I was running Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at Kevin, our tech person's request. So,
but they did the quiet blunder.
It's
for
the
you.
Quiet. It's a stealth blunder.
It's not going to be stealthy for long.
So, are you still recording?
Yes.
So that reminds me. Before you got here, I said let's put you in the center, so we could get a flanking bonus on interviewing you.
That's true.
That puts me at a disadvantage, I think, in the new one, which means
we get an AAO out of it.
Yeah,
totally.
It means in 3.5 you both AOO. Get +2, but in 5th edition, when I roll two dice and then you take the higher number,
we get to ask extra questions of opportunity.
Yeah, questions of opportunity.
Questions of opportunity.
So, okay.
I like it.
How fast is it then?
You can sneak a question. And you will get your sneak
what
question.
What is your favorite color?
Sneak question bonus.
Black, no blue.
So we were talking about the nostalgia gaming, and...
So know your system before you make a character, because obviously that makes a difference.
It makes a big difference.
And the reason that I like to mention that is because for me, a lot of times choosing the system chooses the characters. Because if you play something like Lasers and Feelings, that means your character generation is four words. If you play something like One Last Job, it means there is no character creation because the other people at the table are going to create it. But gosh, then you need to think of what kind of setting and what kind of emotion or story trope you want to evoke in that game. So different decisions. I'm messing you up. I'm pulling you off of the outline.
What? Our pattern matters.
So once you figure that out, that dictates your kind of character, I guess.
Now, for me, more important than the system, I come at it from the angle of, one, what's the group want? I try to build towards the group to make sure there's a good dynamic. And if there's going to be, because good dynamic involves some friction, but you don't want so much friction that it overpowers the entire game because you're constantly arguing or stealing gold from your teammates. It's better to check that stuff out.
Yeah, I've never played a Kender. What are you talking about?
Never. I've never tried to set up two players with each other in a game. And then you get two different games. You get the old stand. I was trying to set my character up with another character because I was playing a total jerk.
It's a trope.
So you get the old generic slots of if you're playing a system that has heavy combat and they're strict on the rules, then you fall into this category of having the frontline combat guy, the healer to take care of. It's almost like playing a video game.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft-esque, which I when I was younger, I kind of liked them more because it was like playing a miniature battle game. But I found now that if I want to play a miniature battle game, I play a miniature battle game. If I want to play a role-playing game, I want role-playing.
Right.
The two don't cross over so well because you end up spending 5 hours of combat in a 5-minute combat, and then you only get to role-play for 3 minutes, which is supposed to cover a span of time.
So, I think it's one of the reasons why I've gotten into mini combat.
And I really want to try Lasers and Feelings.
Lasers and Feelings. Well, the other things that I was going to actually say is one of my favorite games for sitting down with a new group is Fate. And the reason is the first part, if you just play straight Fate, if you don't go for any of their myriad of amazing worlds and settings and hacks and all that stuff, which Evil Hat produces a lot of and they're great, but if you just sit down with Fate Core or even Fate Accelerated, the first chapters in that book are actually devoted to how do you sit down as a group and design a setting, and then having designed a setting, how do you create characters who care about each other and are involved in the setting in ways that the GM can pull on, and then how do you create specific goals and troubles and quests that the GM uses to create a story that basically, you know, you're sitting at a table, you don't know how the story is going to go, but everyone at that table knows that they're getting parts of the story that they created and that they're invested in ways that you don't necessarily get from something like Dungeons & Dragons. I don't know how this turned into a giant Fate plug. I'm sure that I had a direction.
Well, you're going to make a character, so you have to decide how, so you're going to start making a character, then you need the system.
Right.
So Fate's sounding like it's a group. It's a democracy in your character.
Yeah, there's
creation.
A lot more groupthink. And I do find at this point in my life that I really like groupthink games. And I like them for a couple of reasons. And one of them is it means you don't necessarily get stuck in a situation where somebody has to play the healer and somebody has to play the tank. Because you're just not dealing with those kinds of stereotypes because you've created whatever crazy world you want. And sometimes that means you're playing D&D with slightly different rules so that you don't have to deal with that stuff. And sometimes that means that, you know, half of the group, not that this is a personal story, half of the group is totally sick of fantasy, and half of the group really, really wants to keep playing fantasy because it's their comfort zone and what they really enjoy and what they get out of gaming, and you settle on something weird and mixed like magical Renaissance Venice, and then you get really different stories out of that kind of setting because suddenly you've got Renaissance level technology. You can bring in Leonardo da Vinci, and so you satisfy the sci-fi people, but you've still got a fantasy setting with swords and knights and magic.
So they're not too far out of their
comfort zone. So you still get the fantasy. It's very cool. I've actually played with the setting a little bit because I was like, I've never done this before. And we, you know, had so much fun setting up the setting that we never actually played that game. Anyway.
So I think it's important since you need to get and you as in the audience, the listener, you want to get whatever fun out of the game is that you get. So if your fun is the miniature battles game, you need to make sure you're vocal that you're with the right group. Because if that's not what the GM's focused on, you're not going to be satisfied or happy with it, and you'll either want to readjust your goal or find another group.
On the other hand, you can be easygoing, because our group is really diverse. We've got definitely people who like maps, and we've got definitely people who don't care for maps. I mean, personally, I'm not a map person. But
we also have our number crunchers.
We have our number crunchers. And when they number crunch, I sit back and draw. And that's what I do. And I'm perfectly content with that, because that's how I kind of... I don't sit there and I'm waiting for people to resolve this 25-minute argument over whether they rolled a +5 or a +4. I don't have to worry about it. I just sit there and draw, and I wait
so
until
you,
the story starts.
It helps when you have a really long-standing group because you have expectations and you know exactly what's going on. Walking into a new group, I like the games that support me having a democracy and setting up things like the setting and characters, because as you're doing that, you are setting up expectations at the table that everyone can fulfill because they've had a part in creating those expectations. And sometimes with something like Dungeons & Dragons, we all have a pretty good idea of what that is, but I can still play that really differently than you do, because I know a lot of people who play Dungeons & Dragons very much as a minis game, and... you know, whatever, combat happens, and I play it, and then I'm really interested in what happens between combat, and I'm really interested on how I develop that backstory between the crazy wizard who has never been out of her tower and therefore doesn't even know that goblins are evil, and the rogue that she has glommed onto in a very tangled kind of way, and how that relationship works and why they stay together and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So
that is a lot more interesting as to whether somebody got a plus five and hit the goblin with a sword.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, so I think I've evolved. I think I've evolved.
There's my tangent.
Because when I was in high school, I wanted to play the miniatures game. But then I started to evolve, and
some
now
call
I am much
maturing.
More, right. Now I'm much more interested in the characters and how they interact. And I mean, our last Pathfinder game had no combat.
None at all.
The entire night was spent trying to get two characters. It's your fault. But trying to get two characters to interact with each other in a certain way.
Well, it's their own fault because they wanted to keep making constitution rolls to see if they were getting drunk or not. And I was pointing out to my ranger friend that they're setting themselves up to get mugged and robbed, and that we should teach them a lesson. So that's how that all came about.
It was a much more gentle lesson than to rob them,
mug them, which was my first thought.
Yeah, but that's your character. So, I mean, but that's an interesting point. It's all about the dynamics of the character.
I think to go back to actually setting up a new group, it's all about setting the expectations at the table to make sure everybody's on board with the game that you're playing.
Yeah.
And it's something that I have found easier and easier to do the more convention games I run.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you sit down at a convention, you are always running a game for a new group of players. And the first thing I do in every single game is kind of give everybody a layout. This is what we're playing. Here's the rundown on the rules, because when I run at conventions, I run really rules-light stuff. So I can usually tell you in about 3 minutes what the rules are.
You have a very tight time schedule, too, so
yeah, I run a lot of two-hour games at conventions, and the standard for a convention is a four-hour game. So I run some really quick ones. But there is a lot of it where it's setting up an expectation of how the game's going to go, and they're all games that tend to be geared towards humor and a lot of craziness, but how crazy can you get? And, you know, how do you continuously share the spotlight? And what other, you know, what experience are you expecting to get out of this so that everybody leaves the table satisfied and says that I'm awesome and listens to my podcast?
That's the important part.
That's the really important part.
That's the critical
part. Cookies and punch.
Yeah.
Cookies and punch. Well, that's awesome. Actually, I think we'll go on ahead and move to our last segment here after this quick break.
All righty.
Hi, this is Walter Koenig, and you're watching Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
And we're back.
So the last thing is starting an actual game as a GM. So you've got your group, you've got your players. There's this old trope that you always start the game for a medieval game in the tavern.
Ew.
Now, I can tell you as an improv performer, one of the things that I was taught is when you start a scene on stage, start in the middle of the story, because there's no reason to spend time explaining that, oh, well, I got here by driving a car. Well, you just start already where you are with the conflict, bam. And I find that's a fun way to start a role-playing game, is start them right in the middle of some action.
You wake up in the floor.
Yeah, you're dodging bullets.
Yeah.
Especially one-shots. That is one of my favorite ways to start them. And actually, my really favorite way to start them is to go around the table and ask everyone, what's the crazy thing that just happened? And then start in the middle to tail end of that crazy thing that they just told me. And that, again, goes hand in hand with running some really rules-light systems.
Yes.
Because you can't always do that. But there are some new games coming out that I really like Headspace from Green Hat, that basically a large part of the character creation is setting up that thing that just happened, or creating that moment that you can start and dive into, that is, as a GM, is there's a lot of support for starting that in media res kind of start where you just jump in,
right.
Which is great. It doesn't always work, because you have to have some kind of hook with it. I've had some failures on that.
Well, you usually need a reason why everybody's going to be together and working anyway.
That's the one that I struggle with a little bit.
I recommend if you have the time to talk to each player individually without making everybody wait, to get some information on them, such as what makes them tick, what's their motivation, what would make them want to stay with somebody as a teammate, what would make them absolutely drop that person as a teammate. And then you've already got that preparation ahead of time, and you look for those links. It's like, oh, everybody loves bagels. Well, I'm going to have them meet in a bagel shop then.
Right.
So whatever that
and then the bullets
is.
Start flying through the windows.
Out of the bagel.
The windows
bullets
break.
Bullets are flying out of the bagel.
Depends on the game you're running, I guess.
The evil secret agent metal gun firing bagels. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, and then you get smeared by the bullets.
Oh.
You weren't getting out of this without one of those. So it's this goes with the planning, because the important thing with a good story is the character's development.
Yeah.
So the character should always be different at the end of a story from where they started. So you want to keep that in mind when you start as to what that character is. And a lot of players don't ever consider this in their mind.
But it's like a good book. It's like a good story. Yeah. Any good story is about character growth.
So when you start, you might want to consider that if it's a team or if it's a new team, instead of a tavern type thing, you have their employer bringing them together and introducing them.
Yeah.
Because I need more caffeine. One Last Job is very similar in that manner.
It is. So there's another one that I've really enjoyed listening to that I haven't really implemented a lot, which is a fun one, which is the, instead of just having the employer there being like, okay, here's your job, it's the get in my office now. Because immediately you have some characterization where it's, you know, it could be you guys are awesome, or it could be you guys, you never succeed at what I want you to do. But you're the only people left in the office today, so you're the ones who are going to have to take care of it. And you just immediately start pulling out, you know, some of how does a character react to being in that situation where they're not the favored one, or they know that they have problems that are consistent, they know that they're always in trouble at work, or whatever it is. And it immediately gives people an opportunity both to start acting as a team and to gel around some characterization of you know, the guy who's yelling at them, basically. So I feel like that's a really good or really interesting starting point, too.
I agree.
I remember in the Silly Superheroes game, because I based it off of The Tick, the characters all met at the audition for the Justice League type group, and they're the ones who didn't make it. But they decided, we want to be superheroes. So they had that natural goal of being superheroes, but then they had to bond with each other because they didn't have the support of the Justice League, so to speak. And then one of the characters was introduced as a bad guy who was getting a chance for Perot, so they had to convince him to join the team. So
there was a lot of role-playing in that game.
There was. You could also pick one character if there's a player who's really good at being the leader and make it their job to recruit the other players.
Yeah, which is very One Last Job. And One Last Job is specifically unique to my knowledge in that one person introduces the next character and someone just steps up and takes that character, and then they have to create the next character who would be on that team. So that immediately builds teamwork because you immediately have bonds.
It's really interesting about that is if you don't know the player you're introducing.
Yeah, you don't.
You don't know what type of character they like to play, and they just got to go with it. It's
anybody can take it.
So they hear.
So
the
I could sit
described.
At this table, and you know, I can just say, okay, so obviously for this heist, we need someone who can open the most complicated locks known to man, and jump through lasers with the flexible ease of a Chinese trapeze artist.
So you give a list of skills, and then the player steps
up. You kind of give a definition of that person, and then I say, cool, I know where to find them, and then you start the next scene, and so I'd say, okay, we're in a rundown trailer park, and part of it is immediately giving that character a reason that they want to come with you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a rundown trailer park, and, you know, there's five families to a trailer, and there's trash everywhere, and you know, I walk into the door, and I see a person who looks like XYZ. And then someone just steps in and takes that.
Nice. Well, by the time you get to the last player, though, they got to take
stuck,
what they get.
Yep.
But that's a very interesting thing because of the rule and improv of yes and.
Yes.
You have to agree with what the person says and then add to it. So this is a great improv
game. Yeah, I'm starting to think we need to play this game.
Yes.
So, okay, so let's
kind of... I wonder if we can find a GM that can
I don't know if there's anybody who could possibly GM this game, though.
You guys going to be at Tacticon? Because I'm totally running it at Tacticon.
No, because we're running non-discount.
Well, yeah, you have a blood oath to NDK.
I have a blood oath to NDK. I can't
If any of your listeners are going to be at Tacticon, I'm running this at Tacticon.
I'm going to make an effort to get to Tacticon because I like to serve as many masters as possible.
Because he's crazy.
Totally.
So, okay, so let's kind of wrap this up. If you were, I want to be a GM. I've never done it before. What advice would you give me?
Advice for all new GMs is relax. Don't overplan. I actually, and maybe it's just the way that I work personally, I did not enjoy GMing the first couple of times I did it because I way overplanned everything. And that results in one of two things. It means you either have a specific set of railroads and you get angry and frustrated when your players do not follow those railroads. And it becomes a game that is very GM versus players, which, I mean, I guess that could be fun to play. I'm not a really big fan of it. Or you try to plan for every eventuality, every decision you think that they could make, and you make yourself crazy, and you plan five times as much content as you need, and they don't use any of it, and then you get frustrated that you spent so much time planning.
Completely agree with that.
Yeah.
And we were talking earlier, and we used the same tactic of, I figure out who my villain is and what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And if the players never come across them, then that villain's going to succeed at whatever it was they were doing, and then the players will hear about their success, and that villain has more plans. And then the players now have to figure out his next step, or let him get away with his next step. And after enough times, the villain's going to succeed at whatever their plan is, and it needs to be a big enough plan that the players care.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, he's blown up all these orphanages. I came from an orphanage. We need to stop him.
Right.
So
I think personally, my biggest piece of advice is to plan people who have plans, not to plan plans. So it's a small distinction,
but it's a big result.
It's a big result because if you plan a villain, you know what he would do, even if your players don't do that thing you kind of thought that they would do, you still know how he would react in the situation that they put him into. If you plan an event and you say, my villain's going to be here doing X, and your players go to location Y, you don't know what your villain's doing, and you don't know what they're doing now, and they're just off the rails wandering around somewhere. So the big difference is, if they go to location Y and you know what your villain's going to do, it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, okay. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listen to Cinda's show on...
She's a Super Geek, SASGeek.com. You can also find us on iTunes and on Twitter, SAS Geek Podcast, on Google+, and on Facebook, and everywhere.
And at Enchanted Grounds in the Littleton area.
And at Enchanted Grounds. And this is my first time here, and I don't know if I've said it already tonight, but I love this place.
Yay!
Right. And you can get in touch with us also at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com. If you want to just make commentary or just send us love letters specifically to Troy.
He will respond.
Don't think he won't. So, okay. Well, I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
I've been Senda.
And this is Geek Tank. Geek Tank is a production of Fox Blade Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Please give appropriate credit, provide a link to us, and indicate if changes were made. You may do so in any reasonable manner, but not in any way that suggests we endorsed you or your use in any non-commercial purposes. If you like Geek Tank, consider supporting us at patreon.com/foxplague. Thank you.